Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Governor Newsom has authorized stay-at-home orders to take effect for regions where hospital ICU units are filling close to capacity due to a surge in COVID-19 cases, including more than 1,500 new cases reported Thursday here in San Diego County. Now, we'll have details on how businesses and individuals will be impacted if San Diego's ICU bed capacity drops to less than 15%. Actually, that's the capacity for Southern California overall, including our county and several others. That's projected to occur within the next week or so if the current trend continues. San Diego also reached a grim milestone this week, with over 1,000 local residents now dead of the coronavirus. But there is some good news on the horizon. The first COVID-19 vaccines are expected to roll out this month. Hear who San Diego County's top health official says will be first in line to get them, and how future vaccine rollouts will be prioritized for those who need it most. The Willow Fire destroyed at least one home and damaged several more in Rancho San Diego amid high winds and a red flag warning still in effect due to high fire danger. Hear how firefighters managed to prevent a far worse disaster on today's show. The county has authorized new grants to help local businesses in key sectors that are most impacted by the pandemic, and we'll have details on today's show. We'll also have news about some brand new aid programs for businesses and nonprofits approved by the state of California, and those include grants, loans, and sales tax relief measures. Plus, we'll tell you about many scholarships available for local students through the San Diego Foundation. San Diego Gas and Electric shut off power to over 73,000 residents for multiple days due to windy, high fire danger conditions. Hear how rural and mountain residents are coping with prolonged power shutoffs, including 33,000 still without power as we record this, amid winter weather. That includes some who suffered serious consequences, and others who have taken steps to create alternative power sources to protect their families and their livestock from repeated power outages. On Destination East County, we'll share some festive events coming up, including a socially distanced outdoor holiday craft fair, drive-through holiday lighting displays, and some virtual celebrations. We'll have details on a new county program to help renters impacted by the pandemic and how you can apply. We'll also have a report on New Hopes for Dreamers, the young immigrants brought here as children, with a new administration soon to take office in Washington, D.C., and a court ruling in favor of Dreamers. From Public News Service, we'll have top national headlines, including a rainbow wave during the recent election that swept many LGBTQ members into public office, and that includes the new San Diego mayor, Todd Gloria. Hear about a children's book written by several local mayors, all for a good cause. And then we'll have some holiday shopping tips for how to stay safe and help local retailers this holiday season, as well as how you can benefit our own nonprofit if you shop through Amazon Smile and choose East County Media as your beneficiary. Then take a trip back in time to a Christmas Eve hundreds of years ago here in East County during the De Anza Expedition. And from California News Service, we'll have a report on efforts to ease child hunger. Finally, you can get some holiday safety tips for your home. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. California is running out of beds in ICU or intensive care units needed for the most critically ill patients as COVID-19 surges. Statewide, demand for ICU beds is expected to exceed capacity by mid-December, while Southern California may surpass ICU capacity even sooner, state health officials warn. To save lives and prevent a crisis in our healthcare system, Governor Gavin Newsom announced new restrictions on Thursday, including regional stay-home orders once a region dips below 15% ICU bed capacity. Now, no region in the state is there just yet, but they may well get there in the next week. San Diego, which currently has only 23% of its ICU beds still available, is expected to see more hospitalizations and ICU bed usage due to gatherings over Thanksgiving that have fueled an increase in cases. The 15% trigger for our region, however, will include all Southern California counties. That includes Los Angeles, Orange, Riverside, San Bernardino, San Diego, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Ventura, Imperial, Inyo, and Mono counties. So shortages of ICU beds in the region overall could impact San Diegans. Once a region falls below 15% ICU bed capacity, a new shutdown order will last for at least 3 weeks, a prospect casting a damper over the Christmas and Hanukkah holiday season, the busiest time of the year for retailers, holiday shoppers, and family gatherings. Under the restrictions, people must stay home except for critical needs such as groceries, exercise, or medical services. Gatherings with anybody outside your household will be prohibited. Restaurants can serve only takeout food or delivery service, no outdoor dining or indoor dining. Retailers must reduce capacity to just 20%. The following must close down completely: playgrounds, indoor recreation, salons, museums, zoos, movie theaters, wineries, bars, and casinos. Hotels can operate only for critical infrastructure support. Religious services can be held only outdoors or online. Now, schools that have already reopened are not affected by this order, and outdoor activities such as hiking, running, outdoor yoga, and dog walking can continue. At the press conference, Governor Newsom said this is the final surge, adding that with a vaccine rolling out, there is light at the end of the tunnel. Lives will be lost, the governor warned, unless we do more than we've ever done. Vaccines are expected to reach San Diego starting later this month for healthcare workers and nursing homes, and by April, vaccines are predicted to be available for everyone, according to County Public Health Officer Dr. Wilma Wooten. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Getz with the Health Report. San Diego County is expecting to get 28,000 doses of the new Pfizer vaccine in the next week or two. But it will be March or April before coronavirus vaccines are widely available, public health officials announced this week. The action hinges on the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approving the vaccine, an action that is anticipated as early as next week. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, says the first doses will go to medical personnel and nursing home residents and workers. A second allocation of vaccines is expected within 3 weeks after the first round. It takes two doses to attain the 95% effectiveness shown in clinical trials. Dr. Wooten says the county has one ultra-cold freezer needed to store the Pfizer vaccine and has ordered additional units. After healthcare workers and those in nursing homes, later phases of the vaccine rollout will go to people with underlying medical conditions, followed by older adults, teachers, and other critical workers. Next will be children and young adults, followed by everyone else. Dr. Wooten says she believes there will be enough vaccines by March or April for everyone in San Diego County. The vaccine comes as local case counts continue to set records and local hospitals are seeing the number of available ICU beds, quote, continue to decline precipitously, end quote, as COVID-19 surges. The county reported 1,217 new cases and 16 deaths on Wednesday, the last date available before our show taping deadline. In November, hospitalizations tripled, and the number of ICU beds in use by COVID-19 patients doubled. Currently, 77% of all ICU beds in San Diego County are occupied. Chris Howard, president and CEO of Sharp Healthcare, says, quote, the escalation of COVID-positive patients in this county is very real, and it is a very real threat. We're concerned with ICU capacity, and we're concerned with staffing, end quote. He said the county's hospitals are bracing for, quote, the most monumental surge of this virus that we've experienced to date, end quote, over the next 30 days.
It was a long and worrisome night Wednesday for residents in Rancho San Diego, where the Willow Fire destroyed one home and damaged six others, according to CAL FIRE. but it could have been much worse if not for the valiant efforts of firefighters from across the region, given that the fire started at 10:30 at night amid howling Santa Ana wind conditions. And here's what the wind sounded like during that fire around midnight Wednesday night. San Diego Fire and Rescue dispatched night-flying helicopters to drop water, helping to save homes. In addition, ground crews from San Miguel, Heartland, and Cal Fire departments battled the blaze, threatening residences and schools in the unincorporated El Cajon community. On Wind River Road, firefighters hacked through a garage door of a home which sustained heavy fire damage. In the wee hours of the morning, firefighters went house to house, extinguishing hot spots caused by wind-blown embers that ignited structures, landscaping in backyards, and even mulch on the ground. At an evacuation center at the Edwards Cinema, the Red Cross aided around 300 people, giving out food, water, and about 24 hotel vouchers to displaced residents, including elderly people and families with children. But most folks chose to wait anxiously until the evacuation order was lifted so that they could return home and learn if their residences were still standing. The Humane Society set up an animal services post across the parking lot from the cinema to accommodate displaced pets and large animals. Marilyn Riley, a Hamul resident, says the fire threatened the homes of both of her sisters, which were vulnerable due to their hillside locations in Rancho San Diego. She wrote on Facebook, "Thank you to the sheriffs who helped with the evacuations and to the heroes from Cal Fire, San Diego, and San Miguel Fire who saved so many residences." But the risk continues for East County's rural and mountain areas. A red flag warning remains in effect through at least Monday, with Santa Ana winds forecast to continue into next week. SDG&E shut off power to 73,000 customers, many of whom may not have power restored for days. Cal Fire's public information officer posted on Twitter, "Near hurricane-level winds are impacting Southern California, leading to an increase in wildfire activity. Although temperatures are decreasing, this serves as a reminder that wildfire danger is not over. Take the time to prepare you and your family." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
With Congress thus far failing to pass new pandemic relief measures despite CARES Act funding expiring, California Governor Gavin Newsom this week announced tax relief, grants, and low-interest loans to help small businesses impacted by COVID-19. Impacted small businesses can delay paying sales tax for 3 months. A new California Rebuilding Fund includes loans for small businesses. In addition, the state announced $500 million in grants of up to $25,000 each to aid impacted businesses and nonprofits. Governor Newsom says, quote, "By providing potentially billions in immediate relief and support, our small businesses can weather the next month as we continue partnering with the legislature to secure additional funding and investments in small businesses in the new year. Small businesses create 2/3 of new jobs and employ nearly half of all private sector employees in California, which is home to over 4 million small businesses. They represent 99.8% of all businesses in the state. But due to the pandemic, an August Small Business Majority Survey found that 44% of small businesses are at risk of shutting down. According to the Census Current Population Survey, minority-owned businesses are disproportionately impacted. The number of active businesses owned by African Americans dropped by 41%, Latinx by 32%, Asians by 25%, and immigrants 36%. San Diego State Senator Tony Atkins called on Congress to follow California's lead and take action. She says, "Now, we need our federal partners to do their part and pass a federal stimulus so these businesses and nonprofits can survive 2020 and the year to come," end quote. The new programs are in addition to the Main Street Hiring Tax Credit previously announced, which authorizes $100 million in hiring tax credit for qualified small businesses. The credit is equal to $1,000 per qualified employee, up to $100,000 for each small business employer. The application opened December 1st. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
San Diego County supervisors have voted to provide more stimulus funds to help businesses that have been forced to close indoor operations after our region was placed in the state's purple tier due to a surge in COVID-19 cases. At a special meeting, the board gave the green light for $20 million to be added to the Small Business Stimulus Grant Program established back in May. The funds will be available to businesses and nonprofit organizations in these industries: restaurants, gyms and fitness centers, including yoga studios, movie theaters, museums, zoos, aquariums, and planners of events such as weddings, festivals, and fairs. Supervisors hope the new financial relief will help prevent these businesses from having to close permanently. Each of the five supervisors will review applications and recommend applicants. The applications are available at the county's Small Business Stimulus Grant Program website. This is the fourth time the board has voted to provide stimulus grant funds for restaurants and other small businesses impacted by the coronavirus. In recent months, the board approved over $27 million in federal CARES Act funding, but this time the $20 million in new relief funds will come from the county's general fund. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The San Diego Foundation is offering hundreds of scholarships available for San Diego students pursuing higher education during the 2021-2022 school year. Through one online application, students can access over $3 million in funds for more than 140 different types of scholarships. That includes funds for four-year universities, two-year colleges, graduate, and vocational schools. Scholarships are available for graduating high school seniors, undergraduates, graduate, medical, and professional school students, and adult reentry students. Danielle Valenciano, Director of Community Scholarships at the San Diego Foundation, says, quote, "Investing in our students is one of the best ways to expand economic equity and opportunity within our region." She adds, quote, "The San Diego Foundation Community Scholarship Program ensures that more youth in San Diego are set up for success as they persist through college and go on to join the regional workforce." According to research from the Public Policy Institute of California, only a fraction of students in California capable of earning a degree actually do so. The students from Latinx, Black, and low-income communities are historically underrepresented in higher education. Michelle Jaramillo, Director of Education Initiatives at the San Diego Foundation, says, quote, "Despite their talent and aspirations, first-generation, low-income, and underrepresented students face unique and considerable barriers to achieving their academic dreams. By providing needs-based scholarships and college readiness support, we can help students who are farthest from opportunity to better prepare for, pay for, and persist through college." The San Diego Foundation Community Scholarship Program is the largest in the region outside of the university system. Since 1997, the program has awarded more than $36 million to thousands of students. The scholarships are made possible through generosity of more than 100 donors. The Common Scholarship application can be accessed at sdfoundation.org/CSA. The deadline to apply is February 3rd. For more information about the scholarship process, you can contact scholarships@sandiegofoundation.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Jonathan Getz with a Crime Beat report. La Mesa police have arrested Daniel Sandoval, a 43-year-old Campo man, for setting fire to the historic Randall Lamb building in downtown La Mesa during a riot on May 30th. Daniel Sandoval is charged with arson and felony vandalism. The building had been designated a historic structure by the La Mesa Historical Society. Due to the extensive damage, it was declared a total loss. Sandoval was arrested near his home and has been booked into the San Diego County Jail with bail set at $500,000. The Randall Lamb building was one of three structures destroyed by fires during the La Mesa riot. Police previously arrested two men for the arson fire that burned down Chase Bank. The arsonists who destroyed Union Bank remain at large. The arson actions occurred after protests nationally over racial justice after the death of George Floyd, a Black man killed by a white Minneapolis police officer. That officer has been charged with murder. La Mesa police were specifically targeted by protesters over a controversial arrest caught on video at a trolley stop locally that that was widely viewed as racial profiling. That officer left the La Mesa police force shortly after the incident. The protests in La Mesa began peacefully, but the night erupted into civil unrest, looting, and arson after dark, following a tense standoff at the police station. Arson acts included burning of vehicles and spot fires elsewhere in downtown La Mesa, including City Hall, a grocery store, and vehicle fires, in addition to the two banks and historic building destroyed. La Mesa Police Chief Walt Vasquez announced his retirement soon after those events. The city has hired a firm to conduct a national search for a new police chief.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
San Diego Gas and Electric Company cut power to more than 73,000 customers starting Wednesday to prevent power lines from sparking fires. That's during a red flag warning due to dry conditions and gusty Santa Ana winds. Hurricane wind speeds of up to 94 miles an hour were measured at several weather stations in East County this week. Now, as of Friday morning, nearly 33,000 customers remain without power, though SDG&E did restore electricity to over half of those who were without it. SDG&E has said that it issued warnings of prolonged outages. The utility also set up community resource centers at libraries and community centers across the backcountry, offering water, snacks, and stations for residents to recharge cell phones. But some say that's not enough. While some were prepared for outages after repeated past power shutoffs, others complained that the outages put their safety at risk, cost them money on spoiled food and lost work time, with many working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents also suffered stress, discomfort, and inconvenience. The outages forced closure of all schools Friday in the Alpine Union, Dehesa, Valley Center Palma Unified, and Warner Unified School Districts, as well as closure of Hamishaw Elementary School in El Cajon, Eucalyptus Hills, and Lakeside Farms Elementary Schools in Lakeside. Students who were already struggling with the challenges of distance learning have now had to contend with studying in cold, dark homes without internet access on computers due to the outages in many areas. Lakeside resident Mark Hansen, head of the nonprofit Heartland Coalition that publishes East County Magazine, says many of his neighbors did not realize the outages would be continual, not brief or intermittent, and they were unprepared to go days without power. Home Depot quickly sold out of generators, he says. Hansen was forced to cancel an important Zoom meeting, and he asks, why can't SDG&E turn the power back on while there are no high winds, so people working at home can get emails and do work, turn on the heat, and pump water for their livestock? We asked readers on Facebook to share their experiences with us. Rural resident Lisa Wood thought she had prepared by buying a generator, only to discover that her generator failed. Without power, her well pump and automatic watering system for her horses does not work. She says, getting water to my horses is literally life and death for the animals. Now, luckily, she was able to get water from neighbors this time. Cindy Spencer notes that the situation can be particularly hard on elderly people with Alzheimer's and their caregivers, left in cold houses in the dark without TV to pass the time. Elizabeth Leventhal suffered a health consequence due to the outage, and her parents incurred temporary lodging expenses. I had to cancel a planned surgery, she told us. My elderly parents had to go to a hotel, and it generally wreaked havoc on our lives for no good reason. Although SDG&E has said it sent notifications to over 88,000 residents of possible prolonged outages, some say they did not receive warnings, or that messages on cell phones were cut off and not readable. Susan Klein-Toth says she woke up to no power. I had to take a cold shower, and I still can't stop shaking, she said. It's 54 degrees outside. Daniel Harrison in Lake Morena says he did not get a warning either. We have been scrambling today to save our refrigerated goods, he wrote on Thursday. If power stays off several days, I don't know how we will save our freezer full of food. Some want to see SDG&E do more to avoid shutoffs, such as putting power lines underground in the most windy areas. But others have chosen to take steps to protect their properties and families now. Greg Curran says he's lived in Hakumba Hot Springs for 20 years and that outages have occurred several times a year lately. I say quit being the victim and take responsibility. Be prepared, he advises. Invest in a generator. SDG&E has a program for the purchase of generators. He adds, I am older, low income, and yet I made it a priority. In addition to a generator, he now has solar, a wind generator, and backup batteries. With climate change, it's going to get worse before it gets better, so be prepared, he advises those living in fire-prone areas. However, Kern admits he's skeptical of SDG&E's rationale for the frequent shutoffs, and he resents paying for service that he's often not receiving. He does not believe SDG&E shuts off power simply to keep people safe, but rather to protect the company from, quote, being sued because they were too cheap to make the lines safe. And from what I can see, they are starting to really abuse that on-off switch. That we have a right to complain about. Kim Hamilton lives in the Dearhorn Valley area south of Hamul. She, too, resents the frequent outages, but she's taken steps to keep her power on. She took advantage of the Equity Resiliency Program through the Public Utilities Commission website. The state of California will pay close to 100% of the cost of storage batteries and installation, she says. That's over $26,000. To qualify, you have to live in a high fire risk area and be dependent on an electric-powered pump for water. It's a rebate, so you do have to pay up front. Get a short-term loan if needed or find an installer who will front the expenses for a fee, says Hamilton. When her power went out this week, she reports, ours kicked in without a hitch. Her system does not have a generator, but Hamilton says it made a seamless switch to batteries when the grid went down. We connected it to our existing solar, so it's charging every day when the sun is out, she says. She agrees with Curran that public safety power shutoffs for multiple days are likely to increase and says residents should be prepared with at minimum a generator, or better yet, a solar power system with backup battery storage. Now, we reached out to SDG&E's media line regarding residents' concerns over the power outages, but we did not receive a response as of our show taping deadline. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz with a special edition of Destination East County, featuring seasonal and holiday events, real and virtual, to brighten up your holiday season even amid a pandemic. Events coming up include November, a satirical play produced online by San Diego's Trinity Theater, La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, complete with craft market, an Enchanted Village drive-through holiday lighting extravaganza at Noah's Homes in Spring Valley, more holiday lights at Starlight Circle and Lantern Crest in Santee, a Thanksgiving turkey bash and Christmas with the animals at Lions, Tigers, and Bears, plus real and virtual visits with Santa Claus via Parkway Plaza in El Cajon. Trinity Theater of San Diego invites you to join in a Zoom production of November, a new Oval Office satire by playwright David Mamet. The play has one virtual showing left on Saturday, November 28th at 7 p.m. It depicts one November day in the life of a beleaguered American commander-in-chief as the presidential election approaches. Incumbent Charles Smith's chances for re-election are looking grim. Approval ratings are down, his money's running out, and nuclear war may be imminent. Though his staff has thrown in the towel and his wife has begun to prepare for her post-White House life, Smith isn't ready to give up amidst the biggest fight of his political career. The president has to find time to pardon a couple of turkeys before Thanksgiving, inspiring Smith to risk all in an attempt to win back public support. November is a hilarious take on the state of America today and the lengths to which people will go to win. For tickets to this online production, you can visit trinityttc.org. Santee will celebrate its 40th birthday on December 1st at 7 p.m. by holding simultaneous fireworks displays at two sites, allowing residents a chance to cheer while staying safely apart. Fireworks will be shot off from both Town Center Park and West Hills High School. The locations are closed to the public due to COVID-19, but people can view the fireworks from their homes or any nearby location. There will also be upbeat music to accompany the fireworks that watchers can access via a city website link to be posted before the event. The city has already arranged with about a dozen local retailers to hand out official birthday sweets. A list of those retailers and more details are available at the city's website, cityofsantiosea.gov. La Mesa will host its annual Holiday in the Village on December 5th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., including a holiday craft market approved by county health officials. You're invited to come ring in the holiday cheer amid a jingly winter wonderland in La Mesa's downtown village, where guests can enjoy holiday music, craft vendors, a food court, and Holiday Joy Globe photo station. See the red toy soldier and reindeer of winter as you peruse the village. To protect public health, temperature checks, masks, and social distancing are required. There is no admission fee for this event, which you can learn more about at lamesavillageassociation.org. Noah's Homes in Spring Valley invites you to visit its Enchanted Village, a drive-through holiday lights extravaganza, December 18th through the 23rd. Guests will begin the holiday adventure at Steel Canyon High School and then travel through a winter wonderland, complete with drive-through candy cane lighted tunnel, displays with over a 500,000 lights, a towering musical Christmas tree, socially distanced interactions with an elf, and themed zones such as Candyland and Holiday Under the Sea. You can also enjoy holiday music and have photos taken with the digital Santa Claus added into your vehicle along with you and your household members. All proceeds benefit Noah's Homes nonprofit housing and services for adults with disabilities. Over 1,800 vehicles are expected to visit and reservations are required. For tickets, you can visit enchantedvillage.org. Santee's Starlight Circle, a yearly holiday tradition of Christmas lights and decorations, will continue spreading holiday cheer during the pandemic. This year, visitors are encouraged to enjoy driving along Glendon Circle, located just off North Magnolia, in their cars for social distancing, instead of walking through the elaborate lighting displays. There are no fees for this event, which is not organized by any group. Homeowners in the community typically have lights on starting December 1st through at least Christmas Day, December 25th, with lights on from around 5:30 to 10 p.m. More information is available on the Facebook pages for Starlight Circle Santee. Lantern Crest Senior Living in Santee will transform into a drive-through holiday extravaganza, open to the public each Thursday through Sunday night in December from 6 to 8 p.m. Guests will see holiday displays and light shows from the comfort of their cars, with no admission cost. There will also be a drive-up Santa's workshop, where you can purchase hot cocoa, apple cider, and sweet treats, as well as a photo booth. Proceeds will go to Lantern Crest Foundation, which benefits low-income seniors locally. Lantern Crest is located at 300 Lantern Crest Way in Santee. Lions, Tigers, and Bears, San Diego's only accredited big cat and bear sanctuary, is welcoming guests to spend the holidays with its resident exotic animals. A Thanksgiving turkey bash on Friday and Saturday, November 27th and 28th at 10 a.m. will include a holiday feast for big cats and bears, including turkeys and stuffed pumpkins. Christmas with the animals on Saturday, December 12th at 12 noon will bring holiday cheer as guests watch the animals open their Christmas gifts. Lions, Tigers, and Bears founder and director Bobby Brink says these festivities will provide social distancing for small groups this year and require face coverings due to the pandemic. She adds, "It's extra special to see the lions leaping into the pool once a turkey is involved, or to see the bears meticulously unwrap their Christmas gifts." For ticket information and reservations, visit lionstigersandbears.org. Visiting Santa is a treasured holiday tradition. This year, despite a pandemic, Parkway Plaza Regional Shopping Mall in El Cajon is making sure that every child can see Santa. With help from the elves and partners at Cherry Hill Programs, you can either visit Santa at the mall or online now through December 24th. For in-person Santa visits and photos, You can make an appointment online at shoppingparkwayplaza.com. Walk-ins will be taken on a space available basis, though children won't be sitting on Santa's lap this holiday season due to social distancing needs. Or you can sign up for a virtual holiday experience this holiday season. Reservations are limited for virtual Santa options, some of which are complimentary, while others have fees. Options include a live Zoom video call with Santa, virtual photos of kids or pets with Santa, story time with Santa, and more. To make reservations for a virtual Santa visit, you can go to createholidaymagic.com.
See you around, East County.
San Diego County residents who are economically impacted by COVID-19 could qualify for assistance of up to $3,000 to pay for past due or upcoming rent. The program is open to residents in the unincorporated areas. In addition, residents who live in cities with COVID-19 rental relief programs are eligible if and only if their city fund has been depleted. Because of the economic downturn caused by the pandemic, many residents have been unable to pay their rent, which could cause them to be evicted and lead to an increase in homelessness. Understanding the financial burden for both tenants and landlords, the County of San Diego's Board of Supervisors has allocated $27 million in funding for an emergency rental assistance program to ease that burden for thousands of county residents. Now, the county already awarded about $10 million of that to residents who applied during the first round of applications in October. Now, the county is accepting a new round of applications for the Emergency Rental Assistance Program starting December 1st. To be eligible, households must be renting and have experienced a financial hardship directly related to COVID-19. This includes a reduction of income or an increase in medical expenses incurred as a direct result of the coronavirus. Households must also receive less than 60% of the area's median household income to qualify. For example, to be eligible, a single-person household can earn up to $48,540, while a four-person household can earn up to $69,300. Applicants must not receive any other forms of housing subsidy, such as Section 8 or other rental assistance programs. Only one application per household will be accepted, and your landlord must agree to participate to receive this rent relief. You can find more information or you can apply for the rental assistance program at the San Diego Housing and Community Development website at sdhcd.org. Again, that's sdhcd.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The fate of around 650,000 young immigrants brought to the U.S. as children, known as Dreamers, has been in limbo during 4 years of the Trump administration. But now, a court ruling and a proposed key appointment by President-elect Joe Biden are giving Dreamers new hopes. The Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, created by the Obama administration, protected Dreamers from being deported. But the Trump administration fought to end those protections. Despite a Supreme Court ruling in June finding that President Trump failed to follow rulemaking procedures when he ordered the program ended, Acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf again ordered the program suspended in July. But in late November, a federal judge in New York ruled that Wolf was named to his position illegally, so all actions that he took, including the order to end DACA, are invalid. The court ruling, following an August ruling by the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office, which found that Wolf is ineligible to run the agency. Karen Tumlin, a lawyer representing a plaintiff in a suit challenging Wolf's authority, called the federal court ruling, quote, another win for DACA recipients and those who have been waiting years to apply for the program for the first time, end quote. President-elect Joe Biden, set to take office January 20th, has announced plans to appoint Alejandro Mayorkas to be the new Secretary of Homeland Security. Mayorkas helped create and oversee the DACA program in 2012 as Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security during the Obama administration. His appointment, if approved by the Senate, would provide relief for DACA's recipients living in limbo and fear of deportation since Trump took office. An immigrant from Cuba, Mayorkas posted on Twitter, when I was very young, the United States provided my family and me a place of refuge.
Now, I have been nominated to be the DHS Secretary and oversee the protection of all Americans and those who flee persecution in search of a better life for themselves and their loved ones. His nomination will likely face opposition in the Senate, particularly if Republicans retain control after two special elections in January that will determine the Senate's balance of power. Mayorkas faced scrutiny for his earlier DHS appointment due to allegations that he may have showed favoritism when he served at the U.S. Citizenship and Immigrant Services, where he helped clear the visas at the request of former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and other officials. Mayorkas denied any wrongdoing, stating that he intervened because the system was breaking down. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, December the 4th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. One reason the 2020 election is notable is for the so-called rainbow wave of LGBTQ lawmakers elected for the first time. Suzanne Potter reports it happened in California and across the country.
Todd Gloria is the first LGBTQ person and the first person of color to be elected mayor of San Diego. Susan Eggman from the Central Valley will be the first LGBTQ Latina to serve in the California State Senate. And Alex Lee from San Jose says he's honored to become the first openly bisexual member of the state assembly.
There's a lot of things we assume that would have already been accomplished by 2020 that haven't been done, even in California. And so I hope to encourage more young queer people of color to run for office and make their own history in California.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
Reproductive health providers in Illinois are preparing for an influx of patients if the 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade. Brandi Collins-Calhoun is with the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy.
We're seeing clinics require a 2-week quarantine for out-of-state patients right now because of COVID. So with Illinois, they'll be well over their capacity of funding and support once the trigger laws go into effect.
The National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy preparing a toolkit now to direct more support for reproductive rights. And with evictions set to skyrocket after the CDC moratorium ends at the end of this month, a Kansas City tenants group is taking an unusual route to delay evictions by disrupting housing court hearings that are being held online.
Tara Ragavir with KC Tenants says research shows online hearings may even violate the rights of renters with disabilities or those who can't speak English or lack internet access. Members of her group register to attend remote eviction hearings where they speak against kicking people out of their homes during a pandemic. Ragavir says the disruptions cause postponements and so far have brought more than 350 renters more time to build their cases to stay put.
We've gotten cases delayed all the way to January and February. We've also pushed the judge with the highest volume eviction docket in Kansas City to end her hearings entirely as a result of our repeated online teleconference disruption.
In a statement, the president of Landlords, Inc., Robert Long, charges that KC Tenants is more interested in changing the for-profit housing model than in assisting renters. He thinks the group would be more effective if it worked with social service agencies to help people catch up on their rent. I'm Diane Bernard.
A study by the Kansas City Eviction Project found people of color are evicted at a higher rate than white renters. This is PNS. The state of Ohio could soon lose a key source of support in response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Through an emergency authorization, the federal government is funding 75% of the Ohio National Guard's COVID-19 response work through the end of the year. Roughly 1,800 National Guard members are serving in logistical and public health roles. At the Second Harvest Food Bank of North Central Ohio, Julie Chase Moorfield explains Guard members are doing the heavy lifting.
Helping pull orders, loading trucks, packing boxes, sorting food donations, and then they've helped to set up drive-through mobile distributions.
Ohio Senators Rob Portman and Sherrod Brown are leading the request for an extension of federal support. Moorfield says Ohio's entire congressional delegation has signed the letter.
We are so fortunate legislators recognize how critical the National Guard support is, not only to the food bank, but also to the medical facilities, to the correctional facilities, to the nursing homes, to rolling out the vaccine.
Governor Mike DeWine also has asked FEMA and other federal agencies to extend full federal funding for the National Guard through March 31st, 2021. Mary Sherman reporting.
Meantime, Arizona's passage of their Proposition 207 on November 3rd means people aged 21 and older will soon be able to buy marijuana for recreational use, but backers of the law say it also will give some Arizonans a measure of social justice.
The initiative allows people with minor marijuana convictions to have their records expunged or drop any pending cannabis charges. A recent ACLU study found, on average, Arizona courts gave Latino and black defendants higher fines and longer jail terms for pot convictions than white offenders. Dimitri Downing with the Marijuana Industry Trade Association of Arizona says sales should begin April 5th.
January 9th, they have to be issued by March 19th, and the medicinal marijuana license can then sell adult use over 21.
Opponents say it could cause a dramatic increase in the use of dangerous drugs by young people across the state. Mark Richardson reporting.
Finally, our Eric Tanganoff tells us tribal advocacy helped push the U.S. Forest Service to protect parts of Montana's Crazy Mountains.
The Custer-Gallatin National Forest Plan likely will be released in early 2021. It includes wilderness protections for a small portion of the Crazies, a sacred mountain range for the Crow tribe. Shane Doyle of the tribe says he and fellow Crow see the Crazies as a place to be cherished and respected.
The cultural value of the range puts it into a historical context that all Montanans and really people all over the world will be allowed to appreciate in a way that really celebrates the significance of that range.
The tribe would like to see the plan prohibit motorized and mechanized recreation such as mountain biking. This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported, heard on some of the nation's most interesting radio stations and always online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The Purple Project, a San Diego nonprofit organization that provides support to domestic violence shelters, now presents a children's book titled Penny's Adventure in San Diego. 14 San Diego County mayors each wrote a chapter in this very special book, including El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and Lemon Grove Mayor Raquel Vasquez here in East County. The book follows Penny the Butterfly during her visit through various cities in San Diego County as she migrates to southern Mexico to see her friends and family. In each chapter, Penny performs acts of kindness. Domestic violence shelters often rely on grants and private donations. Lack of funding and resources results in victims being turned away from shelters with nowhere to go. The Purple Project maintains an active wish list and raises money to purchase items for domestic violence shelters and victims who are in immediate need. You can learn more about the Purple Project at thinkingpurple.org, and you can order the book, Penny's Adventure in San Diego, at thinkingpurple.org/support. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
How can you support struggling retailers and local nonprofits while also minimizing risk during this holiday season amid a pandemic? Here are several ways to keep the jingle going for your family and local retailers this holiday shopping season. Choose local stores with curbside pickup options. Place an online order with a local retailer for shipping directly to your door. Shop online at smile.amazon.com, where you can choose a local nonprofit to support with every Amazon purchase. Choose East County Media to support our nonprofit reporting and wildlife alerts. If you visit a mall, consider an outdoor option such as Grossmont Center in La Mesa or Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. Avoid Black Friday. Many larger stores are offering extended sales over multiple weeks this year to allow for social distancing. If you're at high risk from COVID-19, ask a friend or neighbor to pick up items for you. Give gift cards to restaurants, retailers, theaters, or other local businesses to help sustain them during limited operations due to COVID-19. Make handmade or home-cooked gifts to avoid leaving home. Time your in-person shopping trips for off hours, preferably first thing in the morning after stores have sanitized overnight. Wash hands or use hand sanitizer after shopping or wrapping gifts. If your child wants to visit Santa, Parkway Plaza has virtual Santa visits to share children's wishes safely online. The El Cajon Mall also has in-person Santa visits with social distancing in the 2020 holiday season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
On December 24th, back in 1775, Juan Bautista de Anza's colonizing expedition from Spain spent the night in Coyote Canyon, an area that's now part of the Anza Borrego Desert in Borrego Springs. Writer Dick Overturf penned these words about that ordeal. It was Noche Buena, Christmas Eve, in Anza's camp. It was cold, foggy, and rainy. Earlier, it had been snowing. Everyone and everything was wet. Babies were crying. Women were weeping. Dead cattle lay on the ground. Hundreds of horses, mules, burros, and cattle were milling around Maria Gertrudis Rivas, who was in labor. Few could sleep, and the mountain Cahuilla Indians were watching. Who were these intruders? The soldiers and settlers in De Anza's expedition had been on the march north from Mexico for 87 days when they reached Coyote Canyon, seeking the promised land at Mission San Gabriel. An earthquake struck that night also, rattling the group's composure amid the bitter cold. After Friar Pedro Font recited evening prayers or vespers, Colonel Anza distributed a potent brandy drink, aguardiente, to raise his soldiers' morale. Friar Font took offense, declaring that it is not right to celebrate the birth of the infant Jesus with drunkenness, to which De Anza replied, "I do not give it to them to get drunk." He insisted that the king had ordered the brandy for the soldiers, but warned that if any soldier was found drunk outside his tent, he would be punished. Friar Font later reported that the people that night were so noisy, singing and dancing from the effects of the liquor, not caring that we were in so bad a mountain in the rain, and so delayed with the saddle animals and tired cattle, but such is the rule of those absolute lords. This was not the first time Friar Font had scolded the expedition's commander. Just 1 week earlier, a fandango, or jubilant dance and feast, was held. The fandango at San Felipe, said Font, was somewhat discordant, and a very bold widow who came with the expedition sang some verses which were not at all nice, applauded and cheered by all the crowd. Now, at the Christmas Eve encampment in Coyote Canyon, after the celebration died down, the friar comforted a soldier's wife who had been in labor since the day before. She was fearful of dying, and I consoled her as best I could, he wrote. Shortly before midnight on Christmas Eve, the soldier's wife gave birth to a baby boy who was christened Salvador Ignacio Linares. He was the third child born on the expedition and the first white child born in California. A monument honoring the baby's birth on the eve of the Nativity still stands today, about 2.25 miles from Anza Ridge, near the San Diego County line. The day after the child's birth, the weary band of travelers rested before continuing on their way. Father Font delivered a sermon and then wished them all Feliz Navidad or Merry Christmas.
COVID-19 has caused a big spike in poverty, and now California has the country's highest number of children experiencing hunger, with 2.2 million kids living in food-insecure households where at least one family member does not have enough to eat. Tamara Sandberg with the nonprofit Save the Children says the organization has partnered with rural school districts to distribute meals.
California has seen the highest increase in the number of children living in food insecure households, with over 860,000 more California kids experiencing hunger now compared with before the pandemic.
Volunteers are distributing meals at drive-up locations and are even driving school buses packed with meals out to more remote neighborhoods in Fresno, Los Angeles, San Bernardino, and Tulare counties. Go to SaveTheChildren.org to find out if your school district is participating. Sandberg says the program has distributed 9 million meals nationwide since March.
So here in rural California alone, Save the Children staff has helped distribute about 700,000 nourishing meals for children in some of the state's most impoverished rural communities.
Next Tuesday is Giving Tuesday. People who want to help can text the word PLATE to 20222 to make a one-time $10 donation. In related news, families that are part of the federal free or reduced price lunch program will be receiving an extra 2 months' worth of grocery money via the pandemic EBT program. Benefit cards will be mailed out before the end of the year. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
East County Magazine has compiled some important holiday safety tips for you with help from Fire Chief Sam DiGiovanna, our Chief's Corner columnist. 'Tis the season for hanging holiday decorations. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from those bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves. Make sure that strings of lights you're using outside have built-in fuses on the lines. Check the plug and be sure you're using lights designated for outdoor use only. Use Christmas lights and electric equipment that have been tested and verified by a reliable testing laboratory. If you have a string of lights with a blown bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Be sure your lights are strung tightly to avoid damage from the wind. Use only outdoor-rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord, and all plugs should be plugged into a GFCI-protected outlet when used outdoors. Now, if you're using a ladder to put your holiday decorations up, be careful. Don't place the ladder in a muddy location. Watch for overhead wires. When climbing the ladder, use caution and have someone secure the ladder for you. Also, be sure to replace any cords that are worn or frayed, or decorations that are broken or rusted. Never put candles near your Christmas tree or other holiday decorations. Run tree lights only when you are home, and don't turn on the tree lights if your tree has become too dry at the end of the season. It's also a good idea to place your tree and other holiday decorations a safe distance away from the fireplace. Always put safety first to assure a happy holiday season. You can get more safety tips by visiting the Chief's Corner column at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jewell, Brian Boyko, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617. Or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.